Welcome, dear listeners, to this week's Afternoon Satsang. This is Prem from Team Radio Sai with Arvind. We are here to start another satsang today, and we're going to continue with the Navavidha Bhakti series, which we've been running for quite a couple of months or more. We, last time when we were discussing in this series, we were talking about Vandanam, as Swami has given, the examples which Swami has given, and of course, as it has happened in the earlier parts too, we did come across much deeper meanings from Swami's discourses. So this week, we're going to be talking about the sixth path in the series, which is Archanam. Before we introduce the topic even further, and before we delve deeper into it, let's ask Arvind to join all of us. Sairam Arvind.
Sairam Prem, and as always, it's a great privilege and pleasure to be talking about Swami, to be talking about the unique and special ways in which he has given us the true meaning of some of these concepts that are as old as time itself. And as you said, we have started it a few months ago, the discussion on the Navavidha Bhakti Marga. The Navavidha Bhakti Marga can be interpreted in two ways. One is as the 9-step path, where each is one level higher than the previous path, or it can be considered as an 9 modes or the 9 different paths of devotion, where each one is equal and each one is capable of leading you to the ultimate all by itself. So in this series, we have been going through each of these paths and seeing how each one of them, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, Sevanam, Padasevanam, Vandanam, Archanam, Dasyam, Sakhyam and Atmanivedanam, these are the 9, we have covered it up till Vandanam, how each of these paths are capable of taking us to the ultimate. But before we go into that discussion, we have always seen how each of these paths also appear to be one step higher than the other. So before we go into detail, into a detailed discussion on Archanam, I think it would be good to have a brief discussion on how Archanam becomes a 6th step, how it is higher than the previous 5, and how it leads up to the next, which is Dasyam. I think with that discussion, we can proceed further.
Right. In fact, when we spoke about Vandanam, one of the things which we spoke about is, you know, the aspect of respect which actually governs that idea of Vandanam, where, you know, I am an achiever and I am a person of my own standing, but when I come face to face with somebody who is probably an achiever in his own right, I don't mind bowing in front of him and, you know, offering him salutations for what he has achieved.
Correct.
And that is one way. And the other way is, like, even if you're the greatest achiever in the world, when it comes to certain people in your lives, you never hesitate to bow down in front of them. Like,
your mother,
your guru,
your teacher.
Right? We saw the example of people like Sachin Tendulkar, you know, whose master's name we hear, whose coach's name we hear, because it is his coach, Sachin Tendulkar.
Correct.
That's the only way he is introduced to the rest of the world. But after almost every landmark in his career, he would always go and, you know, offer his gratitude to his master, or, you know, for that matter, we speak about people like the Prime Minister right now, Narendra Modi. After every electoral victory, he would go and, you know, fall at his feet of his mother, whom otherwise we would have never known.
Correct.
So that aspect of respect, I think, governs this Vandanam. And when you say respect, you know, you don't go and kind of offer everything that you have and you've achieved at the feet of this person you're bowing, necessarily. You know, you just say that whoever I am, I have respect for you. But not necessarily you kind of offer all your achievements at the feet of that person.
Exactly. So that is where Archanam or offering comes one step higher than Vandanam. Because as you said, in Vandanam, irrespective of what I am or what I have achieved, I offer my respect to you. Here, whatever I do, I offer it to you. That is the feeling that comes in Archanam. And therefore, Archanam becomes a step higher than Vandanam. We'll be going to Dasyam possibly in the next discussion, but maybe we can mention it here also. In Dasyam, there's a slight difference, because here, whatever I do, I offer it to you. There, I don't do anything other than what you want.
Right.
So what you want is what I do in Dasyam. Here, I don't know if this is what you want, but whatever I do, I offer it to you. So therefore, Archanam becomes placed between Vandanam and Dasyam, the in-between. So that completes our little discussion, so to say, on how Archanam is the next in the ladder. Now we go into the heart of our discussion, which is why Archanam is a path in itself. If we truly and sincerely follow Archanam, it is definitely going to lead us to our ultimate goal, our ultimate destiny of merger with God, of realizing our oneness with the entire universe, moksha, enlightenment, whatever, in whatever term it is called, the ultimate, that is. So Archanam is a sure shot path to the ultimate also. So we will begin that discussion by going back to Swami's discourse, that discourse which you had mentioned in the year, where Swami gives examples for each of these Navvida Bhakti. And in that, if we see, like how we were surprised for Vandanam, the example given was Akrura. We were surprised because we were not so familiar or acquainted with Akrura, and we studied into the life of Akrura to understand how he is the perfect example for Vandanam. For Archanam, or offering, the example that Swami gives is that of Emperor Prithu.
Right. And of course, it's because Swami mentions Prithu as an example for this, we tend to, you know, stand up and take notice of his story and, you know, what makes him an epitome of this path. And that's what we went to see. I think even before reading it in this context, I've heard of his name in the Bhagavatam. I think he's spoken of as one of the foremost rulers of this land.
He's referred to rulers of the earth.
Right, rulers of earth. He's actually called Prithu Chakravarti. That's his name. And one of the probably standout aspects about his life is he's supposed to be one of immaculate conception, if you could put it that way.
He's an Ayonija.
Right, Ayonija is the word which is used in Sanskrit.
He's born, the yoni is the womb, so he's born without the yoni, so he's called Ayonija. The other Ayonija we know is Mother Sita.
Right. I think it's not correct to call it Immaculate Conception in that sense.
Exactly.
He's born without a mother, not without a father.
Correct. Right. So he's born, in fact, it is said that Prithu's father, I think his name is Vena, V-E-N-A. So Vena was a very powerful ruler, but he fell dharmically. He would not practice dharma, because of which they said that bad times came on the entire land and the Brahmins. See, when they say Brahmins, that time again, it goes back to the pure definition of Brahmin. A Brahmin is one who seeks Brahman or a seeker of God. So it was not your birth that determined your caste. It was your aptitude or your attitude and the way you lived your life that determined your caste. So those who are interested only in seeking Brahman, seeking the ultimate, they were called Brahmins. So the Brahmins, they are the custodians of dharma. They are supposed to uphold dharma, righteousness. Again, dharma should not be interpreted as religion. Dharma is righteousness. So they got angry, and because of their curse, Vena had to die, and it is said that all the evil in Vena came out like one dwarfed, ugly, black figure.
Okay.
And the remaining part, because Vena had also done good, the remaining part, all the good came together, and you know, it's kind of formed the being of Prithu.
Okay.
So Prithu is all the goodness of Vena sans the evil. So therefore he was a very noble king, and everybody approached Prithu saying that, you know, we are not having food to eat. There was famine everywhere. And it, those times, it was believed that the earth will provide you everything you need. That was how it was. So there was nothing like agriculture. There was nothing like growing trees. And they would just wander about, stay wherever, eat whatever the earth yields. And therefore, when there is a famine, people don't know what to do. So King Prithu took it upon himself to seek from Mother Earth. And when he went in search of the mother, it is said that she took the form of a cow and began to run. So Prithu got upset and he decided to hunt down Mother Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So he took his bow and arrow, and when he was about to hunt this cow, which is actually Mother Earth, the cow stops and pleads to Prithu and says, there's a reason why I'm doing this. And there are two reasons that the cow gives. The first reason is, he says that I can nourish the earth only if I am nourished, and I am nourished by adherence to dharma. Since adherence to dharma is gone, I am no longer nourished and therefore I am not able to give nourishment. So if dharma is protected, I will be able to provide nourishment. That is the first thing that the cow says. The second thing that the cow says is, even though if I get nourished, there is only to some extent where I can give on my own.
Mm-hmm.
You will have to start putting in effort. You put in the effort and elicit all the resources from me. Then I will give.
Okay.
And so King Prithu promises her both. And that is how dharma is upheld. And King Prithu becomes a protector of this cow, which is Mother Earth. In fact, that is why Mother Earth is also called the daughter of King Prithu or Prithvi.
Right.
That's how she gets that name, that appellation. She's Prithvi. And then it is believed that it is during King Prithu's time that agriculture, extraction, all these began, where Mother Earth yields treasures to us when we have put in proportionate effort in trying to get it. We put in effort and she rewards. So all this began during King Prithu's time, and this is in brief the story and introduction to King Prithu.
And it's interesting that, you know, because in some of the Puranas, Prithu is spoken of as an avatar.
Yes, and, of Vishnu.
Right, and the very idea behind the, you know, from the story that you narrated, the goodness in a person actually becomes this Prithu, and we refer to Prithu as an avatar. I think it's a sign that the goodness which is within us is actually a representation of God.
Absolutely.
And, you know, fostering that or letting that shine forth is as much a means of, you know, making God's presence felt wherever you are.
Perfectly put. Then comes the interesting part, which is Prem. You'll wonder, okay, so Prithu did all this, great. Where is the Archanam part coming in? You know, interestingly, once King Prithu establishes this, there is prosperity. They say that honey always flowed, the fruits were always sweet, nobody died of diseases in his kingdom. Basically, it was utopia, you know,
right.
Utopia got created. At that point in time, it is Lord Vishnu came and spoke to King Prithu, discoursed King Prithu on how he should lead his life and rule the kingdom. Rule the kingdom, meaning his kingdom was the entire earth.
Mm-hmm.
At that point in time, Mother Earth was the one who spurred Prithu into activity. She said, you have to do activity in order to get this. It was Lord Vishnu who told Prithu how he should do the activity. Lord Vishnu said, when you do the activity, there should be none of these Arshad Vargas, which is Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Mada, Matsarya, which is desire, anger, greed, avarice, envy, and I forget one more. Jealousy, yes. These six enemies, it should not be there. And Lord Vishnu tells him that you will be able to ensure that these don't taint you if and only if you are able to do everything as an offering to God. See, when we offer a flower to God or when we offer a fruit to God, we ensure that it's the best fruit, it's the best flower. We clean it, we wash it, and then offer it. So too, if we want to ensure that all the actions we do are not tainted by any of these Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Mada, Matsarya, then we have to do it as an offering to God. And Lord Vishnu tells King Prithu that this is how you should do all your actions. Then only your kingdom will remain the utopia that it is. So King Prithu is inspired by this. He promises Lord Vishnu to do this. And not only does he do all his actions in this manner, he tours the entire earth. And he encourages all his subjects and everyone also to lead their lives in the same manner. If you are a farmer, then grow crops as an offering to God. If you are an ironsmith, blacksmith, you then forge iron and metals as an offering to God. So he ensured that the entire kingdom, the whole of earth, would do everything that they do as an offering to God. And that probably is the reason why, you know, Swami picks up Prithu as an example for Archanam or offering, because whatever he did it as an offering, as an Archanam. And not only that, he inspired Yatha Raja Tatha Praja Dese. He inspired all the Praja also to do the same. And that probably is the reason why he is Swami's example for Archanam.
Right, and the beauty with Swami's examples is, as we saw in Akrura's case also, you know, Swami never changed these examples. You know, whether we understood why Prithu is an example or not, why Akrura is an example, Swami would always give these as examples. And it really must you know, from the story you said, of course, it triggers off so many thoughts. Let's not go into all of them, but the idea of doing it as a service and the ability to do all professions as a service and an offering to God. In fact, you know, when, if you go through the discourses that Swami gives to the business school, the MBA boys, Swami would often reiterate this point that, you know, when you take any business opportunity, you start a business, obviously we're going to make money. Obviously we're going in and with some kind of a profit motive and making money. But Swami said when you approach the problem, you say that here is an opportunity by which I can provide something that the society needs. Look at an opportunity like that. You know, definitely you will make money. Definitely you will make you know, a living out of it. But see it as an opportunity to serve the society. And let's say that there is a need for, you know, cycles in the society. Don't think that, ah, that is an opportunity, I can make money out of this. Here is an opportunity by which I can make something which the society needs. You know, approach a business like that. I think that is the teaching which probably, you know, Prithu received from Lord Vishnu. He says, do everything as an offering to God. You know, here is land, I can cultivate it and offer it to God. You know, here is an animal like the cow which can be used. You know, that milk can be offered to God. That, I think that shift in the way you approach, that perspective change is what makes a normal activity into archanam, or as Swami would say, work into worship.
It is a huge difference, Prem. Now just imagine when I go in with this perspective, I am not looking at how this piece of land can add value to me. How can this business add value to me? Because that is what profit motive is. When I go with this perspective, it becomes, how can I add value to this land?
Absolutely.
Because I have to offer this land to the Lord. Like I remember when we used to give letters to Swami. We'll write a letter and come, of course. And if we have to wait for half an hour before Swami would come for darshan, I remember many of us would start drawing flowers, would decoratively write Dear Swami and put different colors, decorate the cover. Practically speaking, that's of no use, right? I mean, why is that needed? Because it's just the cover. It'll be torn and the letter inside will be taken. Yet we would feel that it adds some value to it. We, you know, possibly the value of our feelings. Because if you look at it from a practical viewpoint, it'll feel it's just a waste of time. You may say that, hey, you know, instead of decorating that envelope, you can sit and read your chemistry. but each one of us have experienced that. We say, no, yaar, you don't understand. You don't understand the thing that happens. This letter becomes much more valuable. I'm adding value. You feel that. So imagine that is the thing that we add when we want to give a letter to Swami. If we have to offer our professions to Swami, if we have to offer our cooking to Swami, if we have to offer our day-to-day activities to Swami, how much more value add comes in? It always changes the perspective from how I can benefit from this into how can I add value to this. It changes our perspective from seeking rights into doing our duty. Swami would always say that nowadays everybody is concerned only about their rights. Nobody talks about their responsibilities.
Right.
This kind of an attitude will automatically shift our mindset from seeking rights into ensuring that we discharge our duties and stick to our responsibilities in the perfect manner.
In fact, you know, as you said, it makes so much of a difference, especially let's say that, you know, going back to the same example of you have land. See, when you see it as here is a land, I can add value to it with my effort, and through that I can actually serve society, which Swami says you have to see it as a limb of God. At a point when you find that your activities on the land is actually, you know, devaluing the land more than adding value, you will withdraw yourself. But if you see it as, let me, you know, leech this land as much as I can, you know, and gain whatever I can from this land, you will not stop until you can, you know, if the land is getting spoiled and I can still draw some resource out of it, I'll continue to do that. And, you know, I don't know whether this example is going to fit in, but the other day I was listening to an interview between V.V.S. Lakshman, and, you know, he was talking to Harsha Bhogle.
V.V.S. Lakshman is a very stalwart cricketer from India.
And, you know, it was such a beautiful interview, and as a devotee, and we all know that he is a devotee of Swami, what he shared was of very, very important significance. I don't know if you remember, he was one person who very abruptly made an exit from international cricket.
Correct.
I think in the middle of a series, there was a test match yet to go in the series, and he suddenly said that he is retiring. And of course, you know, then the media went berserk, saying that he had some tiff with the captain, and that's why without telling anybody he quit. But in that interview, he explains why he did that quit, and it was really, really impressive what he said.
Hmm.
Because he said that he found that he was no more adding value to the cricket team. And he revealed that, you know, for about almost a week, there was this inner voice which was prompting him that what are you still doing in the team? And he said when he first joined the Indian cricket team, he said that I want to do something for my country and this Indian cricket team. And this inner voice was telling that you're no more adding value to the team now. And you're actually becoming a
liability.
You know, a liability. And somebody else who is, you know, more
capable of adding value,
you're blocking that person's coming in. And, you know, this voice was so strong that he could not overlook it anymore. And he also explains why he, you know, quit in the middle of the series, because he felt that the next series was a, you know, a away tour. So he didn't want a newcomer to come in an away tour. He said, if I quit now, the fellow who's coming in will have at least one match at home to play and get himself in, and then he can go for this away tour. He said that's why he abruptly quit. And, you know, that's clearly the idea that if I am not adding value to this, there's no point. When you start seeing something as an opportunity versus something as an opportunity to serve, the way you will look at it will be completely different, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I'm not surprised why the media would not have been able to understand his logic.
Very true.
Because generally we are built to be selfish.
Right.
We are all selfish, and because of that selfishness, we just can't appreciate something that is done selflessly.
Right.
If Lakshman has left, it definitely must be him having fight or he is ticked off with somebody. We can't even imagine of him thinking selflessly like this is good for the team. Not at all. Because what we are is what we see in others also.
In fact, you know, it reminds me of another incident, which again, you know, for you and me, what is the greatest opportunity? It's an opportunity with Swami. But even that, if you don't see it as an opportunity, but an opportunity to, you know, probably be of some value to Swami, the way it will change. I remember one of the senior devotees, Swami had once given him the opportunity to stay in Swami's room. Okay, I think this person was well into his 50s or 60s. So Swami had told him that, given him that opportunity to be his personal attendant in Swami's room. So this person was in Swami's room for a couple of days. So I think on the third or fourth night, he woke up one day and he found that Swami was not in his bed. Okay, so this was a surprise. He said, middle of the night, where is Swami gone? So then he found that the lights were on in the bathroom. So he thought, okay, Swami must be in the bathroom. But then he found that the door was open. So apparently he went and peeped inside. And there he found this really funny sight, because Swami was sitting there. Swami had taken a bucket and turned it upside down and was sitting on that bucket, and Swami was dozing over there.
Oh.
Right, like, you know, resting his
chin on his arms.
Right, arms, and Swami was sleeping. So he was really surprised to see this, and he woke up Swami and said, Swami, what happened? Why are you sleeping in the bathroom? And, you know, Swami very hesitantly told him, you know what, your snores are so loud, I'm not able to sleep in the room. Okay, and this person was very, very upset with himself. He said, Swami, from tomorrow I'm not coming. And you know what was Swami's response? Swami said, why? It is such a good opportunity for you to sleep in Swami's room. And this person said, Swami, what opportunity is it? You know, if I'm going to be here and disturbing your sleep, where is it an opportunity? I mean, there is no way I'm going to be continuing to, you know, take this chance of sleeping in your room.
I don't know if I was a snoring guy, if I would have taken a decision like that.
Yeah, probably you would have kept awake.
Right? Probably kept awake or tried to see if I can stop my snoring in some manner.
But this person is very clear. He said, I am here. Of course, it's an opportunity for me. But more than an opportunity, I am serving you. And if I'm going to be a disservice to you, there is no way I'm going to sit here and, you know, grab this opportunity for myself. I think that is what is the difference between Archanam. Probably you might say that there is nothing we can offer to God. That's a different discussion. We'll come to that later. But, you know, that is why probably this is in the fifth place and not in the first place. You know, in the idea of the progressive...
Sixth place, yeah.
Right, progressive steps. This is somewhere midway, because here is the point where you still think that, let me offer something to God. You know, that me or that I-ness or that ego is still there. But it is in a sublimated state where you say that, let me offer everything to God.
It's also in a subdued state, because as you said, in this case... you are ready to, though you have an individuality, though you have this ego, you are ready to completely bend it if, like in the case of this person, if it is not adding value, as we put it. I think this is a good point to take a break. Dear listeners, we'll take a break. On the other side of the break, we'll go into further discussion on Archanam, because Archanam is supposed to be offering, and as we say, we offer everything to the Lord. Possibly we'll take up the question as to why does God need our offerings? Why does He need our offerings? If He doesn't need it, why are we making it to Him? And if He needs it, why does He need it? Because doesn't everything belong to Him already? Why does, like in the case of King Prithu, Vishnu himself came and told him that you please do everything as an offering to me. So, yeah, we'll go more into that. But all that after this little break. Don't go away anywhere. Enjoy this little song, on the other side of which we will continue with our discussion.
Thank you. ನೀನು ಮುರ್ಜಗಕ್ಕೆ ಸಿರಿವಂತ ಮುಮುಕ್ಷತೆಯೊಡೆ ಅರ್ಪಿಸುವೆ ಅರ್ಚನೆಯ
ಗುರು ನೀನು ಮುರ್ಜಗಕ್ಕೆ ಸಿರಿವಂತ
ಮುಮುಕ್ಷತೆಯೊಡೆ ಅರ್ಪಿಸುವೆ ಅರ್ಚನೆಯ
ಸಾಯಿದದ ಪ್ರಿಯ ಸ್ವೀಕರಿಸಲಹು ಸ್ವಾಮಿ
ಅರ್ಚನೆಯ ನಿನಗೆ ಗುರು ದಕ್ಷಿಣೆ ಸಾಯಿ
ನಿನ್ನನು
ಗುರು ದಕ್ಷಿಣೆ ಸಾಯಿ
ನಿನ್ನನುಗ್ರಹವೇ ನಮ್ಮ ಸಂರಕ್ಷಣೆ
ಅರ್ಚನೆಯೇ ನಿನಗೆ ಗುರು ದಕ್ಷಿಣೆ ಸಾಯಿ
ನಿನ್ನನುಗ್ರಹವೇ ನಮ್ಮ ಸಂರಕ್ಷಣೆ
ಅರ್ಚನೆಯೇ ನಿನಗೆ ಗುರು ದಕ್ಷಿಣೆ ಸಾಯಿ
ನಿನ್ನನುಗ್ರಹವೇ ನಮ್ಮ ಸಂರಕ್ಷಣೆ
ವೆಲ್ಕಮ್ ಬ್ಯಾಕ್ ಡಿಯರ್ ಲಿಸ್ನರ್ಸ್ We will now continue with our discussion on Archanam. So as we had asked that question just before the music break that we took, we continue with that question. Does God need our offerings? Means why do we have to offer everything to God? Is God in need of our offerings? When I first thought of this question, I was reminded of the 50th verse in the Gitanjali penned by Nobel laureate Guru Rabindranath Tagore. It's so beautiful. It begins very poetically. Of course, I won't be able to give that poetic version, but it begins by saying, I had gone a begging, which means it is a story of a beggar. It's a very brief verse. It's just about 30 lines, I think. In that, he described it's from the viewpoint of a beggar, and the beggar is stating as to how hard the times have been, and he's going from door to door and trying to collect whatever little he can. And he says that today is my lucky day because as I'm going in my begging path, I see in the horizon a golden chariot with the golden dust.
See, maybe we can read the verse.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you, Prem. I think that will spare our listeners of a very prosaic version of a beautiful poem.
And I mean, to think that these were all originally written in Bengali and translated by him in English, keeping intact the sweetness as well as the profundity of, you know, the verse. So this is the, as you said, the 50th verse in Gitanjali. I had gone a begging from door to door in the village path, when the golden chariot appeared in the distance like a gorgeous dream, and I wondered who was this king of all kings. My hopes rose high and methought my evil days were at end, and I stood waiting for alms to be given unasked and for wealth scattered on all sides in the dust. The chariot stopped where I stood. Thy glance fell on me and thou earnest downed with a smile. I felt that the luck of my life had come at last. Then, of a sudden, thou didst hold out thy right hand and say, what hast thou has to give me. Ah, what a kingly jest was it to open thy palm to a beggar to beg. I was confused and stood undecided. And then from my wallet, I slowly took out the least little grain of corn and gave it to thee. But how great my surprise when at the day's end, I emptied my bag on the floor to find a least little grain of gold among the poor heap. I bitterly wept and wished that I had the heart to give thee my all.
Wow. Yeah, this is the verse that always comes to my mind when I think of why does God want our offerings? Actually, God does not want our offerings. It is God's way of blessing us. So beautifully said in this poem that when God actually comes and asks, the term that he says, what kingly jest is this? You are the king and you're coming and telling me to offer what I have got? You're asking me what I have got to offer? I have got nothing. But actually it is not as if he has got nothing. He has got his little bag. Right. And from that bag, imagine, instead of giving that bag, because that's what he has, he picks the smallest bit of corn and offers it. And what does he get in return? By the day's end, that bit of corn has turned gold. That is when he feels, oh, how I wish I had invested my entire thing in you. You know, God, this is the similar kind of situation that Draupadi is in. You know, Draupadi is in the forest and she has got the Akshay Patra, of course, which provides her with unlimited quantity of food. But it is said that once she washes the vessel, then till the next day it won't provide any more food. and Duryodhana, very in a evil stratagem, plans and sends sage Durvasa, who is renowned for his temper, along with his entourage of thousands of disciples, to Draupadi after she has washed the vessel. You know, so Draupadi now has to feed these thousand people, because that is the tradition, that is the custom. If not, she stands the danger of incurring the wrath of sage Durvasa. So since she requests the Pandavas for some time to think of something, the Pandavas go and tell the sage that, sage, you please have your wash and ablutions in the river and come, and we will have the meal ready for you. When he goes, Draupadi has no other succor. She turns to God and says, oh Lord, please help me. You know, I feel all these stories are metaphorical, because it is, instead of going by the details, if we go by the spirit, we realize that this is what happens to us in our day-to-day lives. When we are at our wit's end, we don't know what to do, we turn to God and say, God, help me. And what does God do? Krishna comes, he appears, and he tells Draupadi, is there something for me to eat? I'm feeling hungry. And this is what God says. God, I'm asking you help because I don't have any means or any resource. And you're coming and asking me, what will you do for me? I'm sure Draupadi would have felt the same, like how Rabindranath Tagore writes. She would have looked at Krishna and said, Krishna, what lordly jest is this? What is this? I'm telling, I have to feed 1,000 people, I don't have anything, and you're adding your stomach also into that. But then she says, see Krishna, there's nothing, I have nothing. Krishna then points out to a leaf. He says, there's that leaf, you can offer that leaf to me. You know? And that little leaf that she offered to Krishna, you know, it makes all the disciples and sage Durvasa pot-bellied. It fills their stomach bursting to the seams, you know, that much. And in an instant, the problem is solved. So why did Lord Krishna ask for something to eat? Not because he was hungry, not because he wanted anything from Draupadi. It's almost like the Lord is looking for the tiniest leaf of an excuse to shower his profuse blessings on his devotee.
And it's the case, you know, even Swami gives the example of Kuchela too. He says that Kuchela comes and offers that parched rice. And, you know, for every mouthful that Krishna puts in his mouth, it is said that his coffers starts getting filled with wealth. Kuchela's, and at one point actually Rukmini stops Krishna and says, you know, so much wealth, you know, he will not be able to manage with so much. It's almost like that. And, you know, it always reminds me of when we were all little children, you know. We would often come across this. Let's say you go and ask your father or mother for something. And you ask for a toy or something like that. And finally when it is given to you, your mother will say that, take this, tell thank you. Now, what are you supposed to say when somebody gives something to you? Tell thank you. You know, your mother or father never wants that thank you, and they have nothing to do with that thank you. They will anyway do it because they see it as their duty to give you, or, you know, there is a joy when they give it to you. They have nothing to do with the thank you, but they'll still stop and say thank you when you receive it. It's because it's a good habit to learn for you. And it's almost like that, you know, when Swami expects something from us, and when you say that you have to offer something to God, it is not because God needs that offering, but it's a good habit to offer. It's a good habit to cultivate that sacrifice, because that is actually the greatest wealth which God is conferring on you, more than anything else that He is giving materially.
And another lesson, you know, Prem, when I see this episode of Durvasa, another lesson that powerfully hits me is this. Of course, on one hand, it actually, you know, when we speak of Archanam, it is often said, Krishna says, you know, in the Gita, I think, he speaks of the best kind of offering that can be made to him is phalam, pushpam, patram, toyam.
Right.
That is fruit, water, leaf, or a flower. That is enough if you offer. And here, literally, Draupadi is doing that. She is offering a leaf to Krishna, and Krishna blesses her with everything. But that apart, that is the, I feel that is a surfacial or superficial kind of lesson. A deep lesson what I felt from this is, we often try to please the world. We try to satisfy the world. We judge ourselves, or we evaluate ourselves based on how the world evaluates us. So we are consciously or unconsciously in a constant struggle each and every day of our life in trying to satisfy the world, in trying to please the world. And this episode hit me because it says, don't try to please the world, you can't. Just like Draupadi could not feed those 1,000 disciples, you can't feed the world, how much ever you try. Instead, feed the Lord. It's a more noble thing to do. It's also the easier thing to do. Try to please the Lord. And once the Lord is fed, the world automatically gets fed. Once the Lord is pleased, the world automatically is happy. We have seen this practically. Personally, as a speaker, I have seen where I have delivered a most terrific speech, possibly. A speech to which everybody in the audience has applauded. But there has been no reaction from Swami. And I did not feel fulfilled at all. I have also seen cases where Swami is so happy. At that moment, Prem, for me it doesn't matter what the audience is feeling at all. Even if they don't applaud, it doesn't matter at all, because I saw a smile on Swami's face. But guess what? It is paradoxical in that sense. When actually the applause of the people doesn't matter, and for me the smile on Swami's face alone matters, I have received the maximum applause also, you know, as a side effect. It automatically comes in also. It's almost like you see God, the world automatically has to follow. But as I said, we have to be careful that we don't seek God with one eye or one part of the head thinking that, hey, you know, when I get God, I'll get the world also. So God should not be a means to attain the world. But when we seek God, when we satisfy God, the world automatically is satisfied. Just as when Draupadi fed Krishna, the world automatically was fed. So I feel in that sense also Archanam is a beautiful thing, because let's offer to God. That is where we'll find fruition, that is where we'll find success. Because in trying to offer to the world or to anything else, we'll never find success, we'll never find fulfillment.
Exactly. I mean, what we spoke about, sublimation, and probably when we come to the next step, it'll be more clear. But I mean, the one thing which is granted is, though we all have to be giving up the ego, the fact of the matter, or the truth as it lies today, is I think each one of us believe that we are the doer. We do believe that, you know, I'm speaking and I'm doing the work.
Absolutely.
I'm sitting here and doing work for Radio Sai, and, you know.
That's why I want to offer it to Swami.
Right, so as long as that feeling that I am doing something, or I am creating something, or I am making something is there, then you are in a place of, you know, from being the doer, be the offerer. You know, that is the best way you can sublimate this ego, when you say that I have done it, I am offering it to God. Before you come to the level of saying that I'm not the doer at all, you kind of sublimate this doership by saying that I offer it to the Lord and I do it for the Lord. And in everything, you know, if you talk about the case of Draupadi, you talk about the case of even Sudama, as we said. You know, the beauty of the idea of Sudama was, you know, here is Sudama who goes to ask for something, because his wife tells him that we are in poverty, go to Krishna and ask for something. But so Sudama till the end actually never asks anything. You know, he goes there and he says, I'm so happy to have met you, I'm so happy to have given you something. And till the end, he does not ask at all. But, you know, that's all matters. There is no better way of asking than to offer. like that. But of course, that's...
Because Krishna himself asked for the offering,
putting,
right? In
fact. It's a crass way of putting it. But, you know, if you can offer anything to the Lord, be assured that what you need will be given to you more than what you can even ask for.
Absolutely. So therefore, I think that answers the question, does God need our offerings? It's not as if God needs our offerings. I feel we need ourselves to offer to God.
Our offering to God.
Yeah, we need it. That's why we do it. See, the other famous example that is quoted of how one day, you know, in Swami walks out of the interview room and he's so thrilled, he's so happy, and he's telling to a boy, shall I read out what you have written? Shall I read out? And they say, the boy says, of course, Swami, and he reads out to all the VIPs and everyone who is present there, all the big shots, so-called big shots. Swami reads out the letter where this boy has written that, Swami, you know, I come from a humble family, humble background, but I don't know how I can help you. But when I got to know that you are building this super speciality hospital, I really felt I should also do something to help you, Swami. There's nothing much that I can do, but every month my parents send some money to me in order to pay for my needs here, and one of which is the dhobi charges, the washerman, the laundry. Instead of giving my clothes to the laundry, Swami, as an offering to you, I washed it. See, imagine washing his dirty clothes as an offering to Swami. So I did that, and the money that has got saved there, Swami, I want to offer this to you. If this can buy even one brick in the hospital that is being built, I shall consider myself blessed and sanctified. And Swami was so happy, he went about waving this letter, you know, like one gentleman who has actually contributed a huge financial amount to different projects. As he was saying, he said that Swami went about waving as though he got $1 million. It was only 100 rupees. So you see, it's not about the quantity that Swami is after. It's if God needed our offerings, He should be celebrating a larger quantity than a lesser quantity, right? He should celebrate $1 million. Why should He celebrate 100 rupees? What is 100 rupees? It literally will buy only a brick and enough cement to put in it. But it is that feeling of offering that thrills. It is not what the offering does to the Lord. It's what the offering does to the devotee that the Lord is looking for. Just as you said, the mother tells the child to tell thank you. It's not because the mother is seeking thank you. It's because of what the child learns. So the next time when the child automatically tells thank you, the mother is so happy. And the mother is not happy because the child got either a chocolate or a big toy. It's because the child has learned something. In the same manner, you know, so I think it's very evident that God has no need for our offerings. It is we who need our offerings, and therefore we have to make everything as an offering to God.
In fact, there's that incident which they say during the Narayan Seva time, you know, in the Hillview Stadium when the Narayan Seva used to be held, before the Gram Seva started.
I remember it used to be held every year on the 18th of November.
And Swami would go and Swami would serve. I mean, even as late as the 2000, Swami would serve at least the entire first row personally. And apparently at that time, the Narayan Seva was in progress. And Swami had come back to the mandir. And Swami found that the 8th standard students of the school alone were sitting in the mandir. Right? Everybody else had gone there to serve. And only these 8th standard boys were sitting here. And Swami said, what are you doing here? Narayan Seva is there in the stadium and what are you here? And one of the boys got up and said, Swami, the seniors decided that we should not come because we are too small to do anything. So they left us out. And Swami literally chased those boys out. Swami said, go and at least serve water. Go, take this opportunity, go and serve water. And apparently Swami had explained, I don't know whether in the same occasion or later, Swami said, see, later in life, when you have a need, when you are in a situation where you need Swami's grace, you know, I will look for these small, small acts that you have done as offerings to Swami. And in response to that, my grace will, you know, flow to you. So every opportunity you have, that you can say that, Swami, I'm doing this for you. Do it like that, because, you know, those are the moments which will draw my grace to you.
Though it holds good for that example that you have said, from what I heard, the actual time when Swami gave this explanation was in response to the question as to why Swami tells His students to do prasadam distribution in the mandir every time. He says, because though on your own you may not do, I want to ensure that you do something as an offering to Me, so that I look upon these to shower you with grace in times that you need. It is said that, you know, everybody knows the story of how Draupadi was being publicly humiliated in the court of the Kauravas. It's recorded in the Mahabharata, and Krishna supplied her with a world record length sari, which a bodybuilder like Dushyasana could not unwrap Draupadi, remove the sari from her body. That long he provided. But it is said that years before, on some festival day when Lord Krishna is cutting or biting into a sugar cane, he injures his little finger and it starts bleeding. At that time, I think Rukmini or Satyabhama, whoever are there, they are running around to find a bandage to tie. Without even thinking, Draupadi just tears her silk sari and uses a piece of that as a bandage to tie Krishna's finger to stop the bleeding. It is said that Lord Krishna, at that moment when she called out and said, oh Hridayavasi Krishna, come and save me, Lord Krishna pondered for a moment, what has she done for me? And the minute he remembered that this is what she has offered, he said, okay, she has done, I'll give. It was literally another case of what happened to Kuchela or Sudama. For one fistful of beaten rice, Sudama was given an entire palace of wealth. For one or possibly a few inches of silk cloth, Draupadi was given a world record inexhaustible supply of silk sari, which the foremost wrestler on earth at that point in time could not unwrap from her body.
And I think that is why this offering is so beautiful, and that is why it is universal. You know, you don't have to be in some evolved state where you have transcended ego, you have transcended your likes and dislikes. You can still continue to do whatever you're doing, and you have an opportunity to do it as an offering. So that is why actually this is a very universal method which Swami has given, and that any of us can do it. You know, you don't need just that love for God, and that can actually, you know, entitle you to so much of grace.
See, when you said that you don't need to do anything high, just your ability to offer to the Lord is enough, I was reminded of that episode from Shirdi Baba's life, wherein there's this person who comes and tells Shirdi Baba that, see Baba, I don't want anything, just give me Brahma Gyan. As though Brahma Gyan is some chocolate in some grocery store. But he asked it like that, possibly because he has faith that Shirdi Baba can give it like that.
Right.
But when he asked that, Shirdi Baba suddenly turns away and turns to one more person, I forget his name, who it is, but he tells him that, hey, can you go to such and such a person and ask if he has got 5 rupees? So that person sets out. This person waits, he comes back and he says, Baba, he said that he doesn't have 5 rupees now. He says, okay, go to this other person and ask him, can he give me 5 rupees? In the meanwhile, this gentleman butts in and says, Baba, my Brahmagyan. Baba says, you wait. Then he asks another, but you go and ask this. There's 5 different people before Shirdi Baba actually gets the 5 rupees. This person is now getting impatient. He says, Baba, my Brahmagyan, you know, what is this? Now I am your... Baba then tells him that, see, in your pocket you have 500 rupees and all I wanted was 5 rupees. He says, to get Brahma Gyan, you have to get control over the 5 elements. You have to get control over the 5 elements. If you don't have the ability to control 5 rupees, give away 5 rupees, how will you be able to, you know, to get control over the 5 elements, the kind of sacrifice you have to do are mind-boggling. If you can't sacrifice 5 rupees, how can you expect to get control over 5 elements? How can you expect Brahma Gyan? The person went away, of course, wiser. But what I was thinking is, if actually he had given 5 rupees, Shirdi Baba was ready to give him Brahma Gyan. See, that is the power of Archanam. That is the power of offering to the Lord. You offer 2-inch sari, you get 2-kilometer sari. You offer 5 rupees, you get control on the 5 elements, you know. Of course, again and again, I think I have to state this disclaimer that you should not think that I will get control of the 5 elements, so let me give 5 rupees. Not like that. Genuinely with love, when offered, there is no limit to what God can give. I remember an example that a teacher had once said. He said, God's grace is like an infinity multiplier. He said, anything that you give, it will get multiplied infinity and come. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter whether you offer 1 or 10. Quantity doesn't matter, the quality matters. Because 1 into infinity is equal to 10 into infinity. So therefore, ensure the quality. But it is important that you offer. Because guess what? 0 into infinity is 0. So it's important that you offer something. But it doesn't have to be a huge thing or a lot of things. Whatever you offer, offer with love and that genuine feeling. And that's enough to come back to you infinite fold.
Right. So I think we'll take a break at this point and we'll continue our discussion on the other side of the song. Dear listeners, don't go away, because we'll complete the discussion this week, but we'll definitely leave some part of the understanding for the next week too.
A lot of maybe.
Right.
I offer myself to thee, that I offer
Yes, welcome back, dear listeners. So I think we are more than convinced that God has no need of our offerings. We have a greater need of those offerings. Because this is we went to answer this question because this is a question that often arises, you know, because we come to Swami seeking things from Him. We need things from Swami. And I'm sure in different times, at different situations, we would have felt like the beggar in Rabindranath Tagore's poem, that I am in need of so much, you have everything, and I come to you to seek from you because you have everything. I think that once I come to you, all my evil days are over, my good days are going to come, you will be scattering wealth all around me. And when I come here, you talk to me and you say you offer it to me. What is this? It'll feel like that. So I think we should understand and make it firm in us that it is indeed a great blessing if God asks us to offer something to Him, because God always gives back in infinite times. And it is definitely for our own benefit that we get this opportunity to offer to the Lord. The Lord has nothing to gain or lose from us offering or not.
And this reminds me of what one of our brothers was sharing, one of our alumnus, Rangnath Raju. He was once telling, he is a person who regularly brings these Parthiyatra devotees from Adilabad, right? Adilabad,
yes,
district.
Yes, from that district.
Right,
he's active there and he inspires people to...
Yeah, he's one of the persons who regularly writes scripts for dramas which they stage in Swami's presence. So he was once telling that he had brought a group of youth from Adilabad. And this was in that time in 2008-09 when Swami was slowly, you know, withdrawing and was not coming for some darshans. And even when he would come, that some days he would look very tired at times. So this boy would, you know, this would be a practice for most of these Parthiyatra groups. They would come and have darshan. When they would go back to their sheds, they would have their own satsangs and bhajans over there. So when talking to these youth, you know, he was telling them that we all should pray for Swami. We should pray that Swami should, you know, get up and walk, and Swami should be fine and all that. And apparently when he was giving this talk, one of the people in the audience got up and said, "Sir, what are you telling? I came here because I have so many problems in my life. I came because my mother is not well, and, you know, my father is probably having a kidney problem, and so and so, and, you know,
I came to pray for them."
Right. "I came to pray for all these people. I need support from grace from Swami for my business. And after coming here, you're telling pray for Swami. What is this?" You know, and Rangnath Raju explained to that boy, he said, "See, we all came here because we know that Swami can give us all this. But at the same time, the Swami who can give us all this appears as though He needs something. You know, He has some need for our prayers. And because He has created a situation where He makes us come in front of Him and forget all our needs and think that Swami, only thing I want to pray for is that you should become fine, you should be out of pain." You know, in that illusion which Swami has created around Him and the illusion that Swami has created in our heart, He is giving us an opportunity to actually forget our needs and pray for, you know, something which is beyond our selfish circle. And I think that is what is Archanam all about, you know, to forget our needs and say that, you know, what can I offer to you?
Because, you know, otherwise we are always about how does it benefit me? How does it benefit me? In everything we look as to how something can benefit me. The other day I was thinking of that example, you know, of even a thing like contacts in our cell phone. Guess what? If you're told, go through your now you'll be allowed to keep only 300 contacts or 200 contacts. Go through your phone books and delete the contacts which you don't want. Which will be the contacts that we don't want? Let us see how, suppose I go through, I'll be like going through and I'll say, this guy I need, let him keep. This guy I don't need, throw.
He called for some work, I don't need.
Yeah, you know, yeah, all the contacts we throw away will be the ones that we don't need. I keep only contacts that I need. See, even in mundane activity like selecting contacts, I select contacts who can benefit me. There probably might be a contact who might get greatly benefited by me, you know. But I will not keep, this fellow is a nag. He keep nagging me, he wants this help, that help, you know, just, we even put in spam, possibly, you know, I don't want to receive this person's call only. So you see, it's almost like we tune ourselves to be selfish. For everything there is swartham saprayojana. How this can be useful to me? How this can be useful to me? That's why in, as we said, even as a farmer or a land, everything, we are only looking at how I can extract from this. How can this be useful to me? Never do I think how can I be useful to something. So that is where this paradigm shift in our thinking comes. When we do archanam, it's always about the Lord's comfort, and the Lord is nothing, you know, the Sahasra, the Virata Purusha is the Lord's presence in society, in nature. It helps us to think beyond ourselves and think larger, have a broader heart, have a broader vision, encompass the society, nature and everything in that vision. And that is the beauty of this archanam.
And in contrast, you know, you're saying that we'll keep only the context of people whom we need. How in contrast, Swami would say, you know, if you need me, you deserve me. That's what Swami would say. I mean, I will come to you if you need me. It's not like I'll come to you if I need you.
Correct. You know, I'll come to you if you need me. Wow.
Right. If you need me, you deserve me. And, you know, that's what Swami said. And, you know, I mean, just as we come to the end of this discussion, when you see many of these, there have been so many movies on it, and when they mockingly say that, we talk about rituals where people go and offer things to the Lord, you know, offer milk and offer, you know, all these puja articles. There is that question about, you know, even the idea of offering your hair to the Lord, as it happens in Tirupati. They say, why does the God need all this? And, you know, these are all sham practices, and these are stupid activities which you do in the name of devotion. I mean, we miss that deeper idea. I mean, all the discussion which you had in the past 1 hour is that it is not that the God needs any of this. You know, what is God going to do with your hair? The idea is that you offer your hair and you offer that vanity which goes with, you know, probably having a
and you know what, you inculcate this thing of sacrifice.
Right.
Why does that fellow doesn't want to sacrifice? He's telling, I have spent 50 rupees on the milk, why should I pour it here? You're so attached, you have only selfishness. Selflessly offer that. Of course, there are a few others who say, instead of pouring it on the lingam, give it to the children. See, give it to somebody who needs the milk. That's okay, but it's not as if what milk is poured on the lingam goes waste. It is also fed, it is given as prasad or whatever. It's not as if it's going into the drains. So, the reason why you don't want, long ago I was reading about how a yagnam was done. So they said a yagnam, basically what, you need a fire, right? So why should you pour ghee? Let's put kerosene. Why do you need to burn good wood and sandalwood? Let's burn slippers. See, the yagnam is translated as sacrifice with a reason. We need that sacrifice because we need to become selfless. As long as we are selfish, we are going to ruin the world, we are going to mess up the earth, we are going to rip it apart. And that reminds me of one point that I forgot to tell in Prithu's story, Prem. The Mother Earth in the form of the cow, you know what she tells Prithu? She tells Prithu that you are upset and you are trying to kill me.
Okay.
If you hunt me down, you know what? Everybody will die because everybody depends on me. So, for your own benefit, don't kill me. I think that is what we have to remember. We can't rip apart the earth, we are killing ourselves. In fact, some of the Western thinkers who actually love Indian culture but are not able to see through the metaphors, they have given an other interpretation for the story. They say that this was a time when they don't consider the cow as Mother Earth. They consider a cow as a cow only.
Okay.
So they say that this was the time when the Hindus stopped eating meat, decided to revere, because a cow alive is much more valuable and much more life-giving than a dead cow. So they give a very, very, you know, kind of cheap and very money.
Actually, it's the other way around. I think Mother Earth took the form of a cow because by nature we revere the cow. You know, it could have taken the form of any other animal.
Correct.
The idea of taking the form of a cow is because by nature we generally are reverential towards the animal. It's not the, you know, other way around. It's not like reverence started after the episode.
So,
might not be,
you know,
like
forget the biased views, but I'm saying, even if we take that view, for instance, they felt that, you know what, killing the cow is less beneficial than revering it. By revering it, we get benefited more. We get milk, we get ghee, we get, you know, so many things, the panchagavyas from the cow. So I'm saying, at least let us have that kind of practical mindset. You know, at this point in time, I think it's not out of place to mention, recently I had been on a vacation to Ooty. My wife is a big fan of cheese. So she said that there's a cheese production farm here. Let's go and see how cheese is made. So I happened to go to this cheese production farm. And when I went there, you know, I was amazed.
Mm-hmm.
When I went there, you know, the person who is running this whole thing was a certain Mr. Mansoor Khan. And when I found out the credentials of Mr. Mansoor Khan, I was stunned. You know, who is this Mansoor Khan? This Mansoor Khan is a cousin to Aamir Khan, the popular Bollywood actor.
Mm-hmm.
And he has directed two movies. One is Kayamat Se Kayamat Tak. The other is Jo Jeeta Woh Sikandar. These are super hit movies.
Right.
After that, he has directed a few more movies. So I said that, are you the same Mansoor Khan? You know, because in front of him, I took out my phone and Googled and came up and yeah, the face match. He said, yeah, I'm the same guy. And I said, you had such a ability, you know, even now your cousin is winning everything. You know, he's a superstar. He's got crores and crores of property, assets, everything. And you could have gone that way. In fact, it was Mansoor Khan who launched Aamir Khan.
Right.
Through Kayamat Se Kayamat Tak.
Right.
So, you know, through Jo Jeeta Woh Sikandar. So, what is it that you're doing? Why did you? He said that, you know, the world has a wrong notion of growth. He has actually written a book called The Third Curve. I have it with me. It's very interesting. I will not go into those details now. But he says, you can't. Even growth is bad. He said, take the human body for example. Up to a certain point, you need growth. Beyond that, it's called cancer. He says, growth is good up to a certain limit. Beyond which, beyond limits, growth becomes terrible. We have to stop growth. We can't go on like this. And why I brought up this thing is because after that I told him about how Swami speaks on sealing on desires and how Swami also says that, you know, we also had that discussion in a satsang where nothing is bad, anything in the extreme is bad. That is what we had a discussion. Anything in moderation is good,
right.
Anything in extreme is bad. So he resonated with that. At that point in time he said, see, it's very wonderful that you are practicing spirituality in your life. He said that I came to this conclusion. So I gave up all that. He has taken up a piece of land and he's organically cultivating. They don't use artificial fertilizers. They don't use, in fact, all around his land, there are tea estates. But he says this kind of tea degrades the land because tea on its own, if it grows, it's okay. When you cultivate it like that, tea also ensures no other plant grows nearby. It's like a parasite and it degrades the land. So he said that though this was a tea estate, I have stopped. We are trying to bring back the land to its, we don't want to rip apart the word he used. I don't know if it is this, but he used the word, we are, you know, brutally assaulting the land. that is the word he used. He said, I don't want to assault the land like that. This is our mother. So organically they have cows, they have 20 cows who are milked. It's not as if all of them are in heat and producing milk. It's all done in the natural way. And he said, I came to all this not because of any moral compulsion, not because of any religious teaching, not because of any spiritual teaching. I came to this because this is the only way forward. This is the only way we can survive. Otherwise, we are killing our own selves. Because if we kill the earth, we are dead. We can't live without the earth. He's there in the book also, he says, this is not inspired by any spiritual thing, by any moral thing, by any religious thing. This is simply practical because it's the only way forward. So what I'm trying to say is, forget all the other aspects. Even at least like that, when we do the offering, let us do it, if not for God or for spiritual, because this is the way. Only when I am selfless, can we all survive. If I am selfish and everyone around is selfish, it's only a matter of time before we demolish this earth, the ecosystem, everything, and lead to complete ruin.
I think in passing you had made a reference about yajnam and offering ghee and probably not kerosene to it. No, there is, the symbolisms are very, very heavy in the act of sacrifice itself. Probably one aspect of that is what is going to be the lead for the next week's discussion, because, you know, the idea of offering ghee is not only that it feeds the fire, but, you know, in the olden days, as you said, the milk is something which is obtained from the cow. And the most refined product which we get from milk is actually the ghee. That, you know, after all the effort that you put and after the finest aspect that you can draw from milk is the ghee, and you say that I'm going to offer this to God.
It is also called the highest because, you see, milk will spoil after some time.
Right.
Butter will stay for a little longer, but it will spoil. Ghee stays for very long without becoming
rancid. So I think that is the idea, that when you offer something to God, the idea of offering it to God will actually infuse perfection into the offering itself. I think that is what Archanam will do, that, you know, when you start saying, I want to offer to God, what will that idea that I want to offer do to the activity which you wish to offer itself? And probably that is going to be the discussion for the next session.
And in order to spur us along the discussion for the next session, I think we can conclude this session. It will be a good bridge to hear what Swami says about Archanam. Because we know Archanam is often traditionally defined as what Krishna has said. Phalam, pushpam, patram, toyam. You offer a leaf, a flower, a fruit or some water, that's enough for God. But that again is only metaphorical. It has so much of deep meaning. As you said, we'll go into that next week. But to act as a bridge between this week and next week, we'll probably listen to that discourse clip where Bhagwan speaks about Archanam.
Right. I think this was delivered in 1993, summer course, the 24th of May. So let's listen to that, and I think...
Wow, today is the 26th of May.
Right. Probably Swami covers more than what we have managed to cover in the past 1.5 hours.
పత్రం పుష్పం ఫలం తోయం ఈ నాలుగింటిని సమర్పించమని చెప్పని వేదాంతం ప్రబోధించింది.
వేదాంత సెట్ యు సరెండర్ యు ఆఫర్ దీస్ త్రీ దీస్ ఫోర్
భగవంతుడు ధన కనుక వస్తువులకు కానీ లేక అధికార స్థితులకు కానీ ఏమాత్రం కూడా నువ్వు లొంగేటువంటి వాడు కాదు.
గాడ్ విల్ నెవర్ సబ్మిట్ హిమ్సెల్ఫ్ బికాస్ ఆఫ్ యువర్ పొజిషన్ ఆర్ అథారిటీ.
దీనికి సరైనటువంటి అంతరార్థము కృష్ణ తులాభారంలో చక్కగా ప్రకటించింది.
The inner significance of this is very well known in Krishna Tulabhara.
Krishnuni tanavaduga cheskovalani satyabhama swarthamainti manasto sarva vidhamainti yaka nagalanta vesindi.
Out of selfishness, satyabhama wanted to own Krishna.
Ganakanaka vastuva anadanta vesindi.
She offered all her property in wealth and jewelry.
Bhagavantudu thugaledu.
But God didn't balance that.
Tirigi Rukmini vachi.
Later Rukmini coming.
Deeniki premane pradhanamu aneetunte oka gana upadesham chesindi satyabhamaku.
She taught the lesson of wisdom to Satyabhama.
ఈ ప్రకృతికి ప్రకృతి యొక్క దీని తృణం కూడా కొంత అవసరం.
ఫర్ దిస్ నేచర్ ఎ నేచురల్ ఆబ్జెక్ట్ ఇస్ ఆల్సో నెసెసరీ.
సంజయ్ సహాని చెప్పాడు, ద్రౌపదికి అక్షయ పాత్ర లోపల తాను భుజించిన తర్వాత శుభ్రం చేసి పెట్టేటువంటి ఒక స్వభావం ద్రౌపదిది.
సంజయ్ సహాని సెడ్ దట్ ది రెగ్యులర్ హ్యాబిట్ ఆఫ్ ద్రౌపది ఇస్ టు క్లెన్స్ దట్ వెసల్.
కానీ ఎక్కడో అక్కడ ఇంత బలుసాకు ఒక చిన్న ముక్క చిక్కింది.
బట్ a small fraction, a little bit of the leaf is noticed.
Krishna ani krishna arpana chesindi.
Repeating krishna's name she offered it.
Inta alpamaina krishna arpana cheste kada adhikamainatundi oka deenini krishnudu andistuntadu.
When such a small thing is offered,
arpitamu cheyaka
without offering
sampadana manam andukodaniki veele kaadu.
It is not possible to acquire wealth.
Edo kritiga manam arpitam kavali.
You have to sacrifice in one
bazaar kaina velli oka shop lopala 10 rupayalu vaadiki shop keeper mogala kodte vaadu manam mokalu oka handkerchief kottestadu.
If you go to the shop and pay 10 rupees, the shopkeeper will give you handkerchief.
నీవు 10 రూపాయల వాడికి ఇవ్వకపోతే వాడి ఖర్చు నీకు ఎట్లా వస్తుంది?
ఇఫ్ యూ డోంట్ పే 10 రూపీస్, హౌ డు యూ ఎక్స్పెక్ట్ కర్చేజ్?
అదే రీతిగా కుచేలుడు కూడా పిటికడు అడుగులైనా కృష్ణుడికి అందించినప్పుడే బహుళ భాగ్యాన్ని అందించాడు కృష్ణుడు.
కుచేల ఆల్సో ఆఫర్డ్ హ్యాండ్ ఫుల్ ఆఫ్ వీట్ అండ్ రైస్ అండ్ కృష్ణ.
కనుకనే భారతీయ సంస్కృతి యందు దేవాలయం పోయేటప్పుడు ఇంత పుష్పము లేక పత్రము లేక ఫలము దీన్ని ఒకదాన్ని తీసుకుని పోమని చెప్పని చెప్తుంటారు పెద్దలు.
Therefore elders say when you go to the temple either you take the leaves or the flowers.
కానీ నిజముగా విచారణ చేస్తే కృష్ణ నామములకు కృష్ణ రూపమే సరైన తూకం.
Actually speaking there will be correct balance between the form and the name of Krishna.
అయితే కృష్ణ రూపము ఫామ్ గా ఉంటుంది, కనిపిస్తుంది కంటికి, కృష్ణ నామము కంటికి కనిపించదు.
But you see the form of Krishna with the naked eye. But not the name.
Karupani Narada maroku upadesham chesadu Satyabhamaku.
Therefore Narada gave another teaching to Satyabhama.
Amma sakara rupude untunnadu.
Krishna is in the very form.
Ee Rukmini nirakara namamunu smaristhe naaku ochina aadayam enti?
When Rukmini thinks of Krishna as the formless aspect, what is the problem?
Satyabhama naaku danam chesindi.
Satyabhama offered all this.
Ee Krishnunu ammukoni nenu bratakali.
I have to sell out Krishna and live.
Kabatti naaku edo okati phaltam raavali.
I should have some profit.
Ani cheppetappudiki appudu Rukmini cheppindi.
Then Rukmini said,
patramo
either the leaf
pushpamo
or flower
phalamo
or fruit
to హృదయము
ఆల్ వాటర్
భక్తి గలిగిన వానికి వశుడవౌట సత్యమేనా నీవు ఈ తులసి దళమునకు తుగుదుగాక
If it is true, O God, that you submit yourself to the one with the devotion, let you be balanced
Krishna
with the
tulsi dalam vesindi.
Repeating Krishna's name, she gets that tulsi.
Krishna namam Krishna manaku samanamaina thookam vachindi. Tulsi dalam extra thookam ayipoyindi.
Then there is perfect balance, but this tulsi leaf has become extra weight.
Kadukane manamu patramo pushpamo polavanti emiti deeni artham.
So when we say the leaf, flower, fruit, what is
it? Billa patro, maradi patro, tulsi patro kaadu manaku patramo.
The leaf is not of different
plant.
They're sure to decay and fall.
దరించినటువంటి యొక్క దేహం అనేటువంటిది నీకు పత్రము.
This very body is the leaf.
పత్రము. ఇది భగవత్ అర్పితము.
This body, the leaf, is to be offered.
పుష్పము.
Then flower.
అది హృదయ పుష్పము.
That is the flower of the heart.
ఫలము.
Fruit.
అది మనోఫలము.
That is the fruit of the mind.
Toyamo.
Then water.
Ananda Bashpamale Toyamo.
The tears of joy.
Ivi manaku Bhagavantuniki arpinchavalsinatundi.
These are to be offered to God.
Adi nijamainatundi antaratthaniki sariyainatundi oka swaroopam.
This is the inner significance.
Ee vidhamainatundi oka jeevithanni Bhagavantuniki idi chesinappudu atheetamainatundi over mind lo manam praveshisthamu.
When we offer these things, we'll reach that state of over mind. Kaani
bhakti పార్ట్ టైం గా ఉండకూడదు ఫుల్ టైం గా ఉంటుండాలి
ఐ థింక్ స్వామి హస్ గివెన్ అస్ అ లాట్ ఆఫ్ ఫుడ్ ఫర్ థాట్ స్వామి స్పోక్ అబౌట్ దట్ పత్రం ఫలం పుష్పం తోయం అండ్ హౌ ఈచ్ వన్ ఆఫ్ ఇట్ మీన్స్ అ డిఫరెంట్ థింగ్ దేహ పత్రం అండ్ మనోఫలం
హృదయ
పుష్పం దే లిసన్స్ విల్ బి టాకింగ్ అబౌట్ ఈచ్ వన్ ఆఫ్ దాట్ ఐ థింక్ బట్ వన్ థింగ్ విచ్ స్వామి సెట్ ఇన్ ది ఎండ్ which probably we'll have to go back to the discourse to see what Swami was speaking about and what context Swami said that. Swami said that, you know, when it's not about being part-time devotees, it's becoming full-time devotees. I think that can be applied to each path we've spoken about because when you bring that to Archanam, you know, when you say that when I go to a temple, I'll take offerings to go and when I say that I will lead out my entire life as an offering to God, I think that's the difference between part-time devotion and full-time devotion. And that is what will make this being one of the steps to the ultimate stage, making it a complete path to ultimate stage. That will be the difference. But dear listeners, we will continue with what Swami left us with in that idea of offering a fruit, a leaf, water and flowers to the Lord. We'll take it up next week. Thank you for being with us. We're going to end this session with a song as always. On the other side of the song, you'll be joined by Brother Chandu with his program, Love to Love. Do join us again for next week for the concluding episode on Archanam.
तुझे हर दम प्यार में तेरे दिल हमारे चाहे तुझे हर दम जीना नहीं है तेरे बिन कहीं देखा तुझे तो प्यार को जाना सही जीना नहीं है तेरे बिन कहीं देखा तुझे जाना चाहिए जीवन की मंजिल तुम्हें हो सारी चाहे तुझे हर दम प्यार में तेरे चाहे तुझे हर दम तेरे तू मेरे साथ दिल की धड़कन तुम ही हो साई, सारे सपने तुम ही हो, दिल की धड़कन तुम ही हो साई, तप के अपने तुम ही हो, ये हमारे नंगे करारे तुझको सदा तेरे दिल हमारे चाहे तुझे हर दम प्यार में तेरे चाहे तुझे हर दम जिया नहीं है तेरे बिन कहीं देखा तुझे तो प्यार को जाना चाहिए चाहे तुझे हर दम प्यार तेरे दिल हमारे